Hello. Can you all hear me? Cool. Nice to meet you all and excited to see so many faces here. We have an all-star panel of experts from the music industry slash where it overlaps with technology, specifically NFTs, and here to talk today about how the future of NFTs might empower music creators. So we have Carolyn, Lynn, and Forrest here. I'll let them introduce themselves in a second. Real quick intro from my part. My name's David. I work for Protocol Labs, where we create decentralized protocols to upgrade the internet. And specifically, I lead the teams behind two products, NFT.storage and Web3.storage. NFT.storage, our mission is to preserve all off-chain NFT data as a public good. So with that, I will hand things over to our panelists. And Carolyn, maybe you can start with a quick introduction.
Well, also in a panel like this, I like to know who's in the room. So who's here because they are music people? Oh, most of you, okay. Who's here because they are technology, blockchain, crypto people? Some, okay, good. That gives me a good sense. So my name is Carolyn Rogers. I am head of marketing at Blockhouse, which is a marketing communications company focused on the blockchain space. And specifically, we've been focused on a layer one blockchain called Tezos, which maybe a few of you have heard of. But so our role in that space is to generate awareness and engagement and adoption within the Tezos ecosystem. Tezos, for those of you who may not know, is a proof-of-stake blockchain, which means it's much more energy efficient than, you know, the Bitcoins and the Ethereums of the world that use proof-of-work and, you know, mining, energy efficient. And it's also self-upgradable, so you don't have this forking problem, which has plagued other blockchains in the past. So. Prior to this, I spent about almost a decade at IBM in a range of different technologies. I was on the team that launched its enterprise blockchain platform. That's what really got me interested in the space several years ago. And just in terms of, you know, the music industry, at Tezos and at Blockhouse, we are partnering with a number of different brands, different collaborators in the ecosystem, like one of that are facilitating art and artists to use Tezos and NFTs to bring their art to people in new ways. So it's an exciting time to be a part of this.
Yeah, hi, everyone. I'm Lin Dai. I'm the CEO and co-founder for OneOf.com. So OneOf is a green NFT platform built for music, sports, lifestyle, and we're up to 2 million times more energy efficient thanks to, you know, being powered by Tezos blockchain. And we are artists first. So, you know, we started working on a company about 2 years ago, backed by Quincy Jones. And now we are one of the leading music platform focused on kind of using blockchain to empower musicians. We work with, you know, we're the NFT partner for everybody from Doja Cat to Whitney Houston. We just announced last week we're kind of the exclusive NFT partner for Biggie Smalls, which is kind of a personal favorite of mine. And on the industry side, you know, with the official NFT platform for the Grammys, the NFT partner for Warner Music Group, iHeartRadio, you know, we try to strike a balance to really find an equitable way for both major and independent artists to thrive in this new economy and use the technology to empower artists.
Cool. I'm Forrest Browning, one of the co-founders of Audius. So Audius is a music streaming service that connects artists directly to fans and exclusive new music. We do about 6 or 7 million monthly active users at this point. You can think of it kind of as like a SoundCloud on the blockchain. We're the largest decentralized Web3 app that's out there. And our focus is really on empowering artists, giving them kind of direct data and direct access to their fan base, and helping them monetize Web3 and everything that comes from that, including NFTs, the metaverse, you know, the wide litany of things that pop up in that space. And I think, yeah, Audius is basically acting as a Web3 on-ramp for a lot of musicians, especially electronic and hip-hop right now.
Awesome. Thanks for the intros. I have some questions in front of me, and I'm going to tick through a number of them, and then at the end would love to hear from y'all if you had questions for the panelists as well. So maybe start thinking about what those potentially could be. So kicking things off, I'm going to share kind of an insane statistic. So Rolling Stones reports that 98.6% of artists on Spotify make an average of $12 per month on the platform. So it's not just a long tail. It's like, you know, the vast majority of artists on Spotify. And what can you do with $12 a month, really? That's certainly not sustainable for you as an individual artist or for an artistic community out there. So I'd love to ask the panelists what role you see NFTs in playing in this power dynamic, really between the middle class of artists and the sales channels that they need and rely on to make a living.
Well, I think also, I actually just saw this morning that Spotify is adding Web3 roles. So I believe they're thinking about this. And the statistics are even crazier on Spotify because I think even the top artists on the platform only bring in like, you know, 50K in streaming. And if that's the top artists, imagine, you know, the 99% of people who are just really not being compensated in the way that you might expect. So I think NFTs and blockchain and the Web3 world introduce scarcity and ownership in a way that has not yet really been seen in the industry. It's never been easier to make music and distribute music and listen to music than it is right now, but it's also maybe never been harder to make a living off of it. And I think music, more than maybe almost any other art form, you could argue, is so deeply emotional, and that there is demand from people, from fans, to connect with their favorite artists in new ways. And so I'm sure we'll get into the different ways that that is made possible by NFTs. You know, Lynn, I'm sure you're seeing a lot of that on your platform.
Yeah, you know, I think the big opportunity here is for any artist, right? So streaming was great, but it's really kind of algorithmically, it favors the mega artists, the Taylor Swift of the world, that can actually command 100 million streams. So this NFTs basically is a direct connection between the artists and the fans. If you have 1,000 true fans or 100 true fans who values your art more than 0.0033 cents per stream, they can show it, right? Like before, you know, 10 years ago, like I went out and bought every CD like my favorite artist came out. Like I could just, you know, download them on Napster. But that was just a way to show support. I could go to their concert, show support. We live in the digital age right now. We live maybe 60% plus of our lives like looking, staring at the phone. So this is a new way of really for artists to give fans something that, you know, they can truly own. And also something that has never happened before is the fan, by owning your NFT, can actually participate in your career for the first time, right? Before, all the music business model has always been like give, right? Like I will give, you know, I will perform a show, give you experience. I will, you know, like record a song. I will do a meet and greet. You as a fan, pay me for that, please. But NFTs actually create a way for you to participate in somebody's career. How many of you, I mean, everybody had this experience, like, I saw so-and-so at this, like, little dive bar on Sunset before they were big, right? Like, the Chainsmokers played my assistant's birthday party at my apartment in New York. Like, I can't prove it. I don't participate in, like, kind of, like, you know, I was like, you guys gonna be, like, are super dope at that point, right? So now fans, your early fans can have your rookie card, your first NFT, and then as you go on, you know, in 3 years, 5 years, you win a Grammy, imagine how much that first edition NFT is going to be worth to your fan that actually supported you on day one and paid maybe $5 for it, maybe $10 for it, right?
No, exactly, without a doubt. And I think at Audius, that's exactly what we spend a lot of time focusing on, is that sort of super fan level of connection, right? You know, the stat about, what is it, 98% of Spotify users make an average of $12. The interesting part there is just kind of thinking about how much the world runs on power laws, in the sense of it's far less linear than I think people would intuitively think. It's bell curves and power laws. And so what I mean by that is that all you need to do is hear that stat and realize that trying to improve that stat is probably not the best way to go about getting more money in the pocket of an artist, right? Let's say an average, you know, 98% make $12 a year, $12 a month, whatever the stat there is. I'm not sure if it was 12. Yeah. Is it monthly?
Per month.
It's per month. Right? So $12 a month.
Slightly better, but.
So let's say you just absolutely kicked ass at revolutionizing the music industry or music streaming industry, and you were somehow going to 10x the price per stream. I mean, that's just kind of insane, even from a unit economics perspective, if you think about ad revenue and things like that. But let's say you were able to absolutely peg it out in 10x what the price per stream was. If everything else stays the same there, that same artist is still only making $120 a month. That's still not enough to live off of. So then it's like, okay, well, now we have to 100x it or 1,000x it. And at that point, you start kind of thinking, all right, let's take a step back here. Maybe there's a better way to go about this rather than trying to kind of beat a dead horse and improve the price per stream stat. Because that's probably not going to be the easiest way to get more money in the pocket of a musician. And you know, with Audius, I think the way we view that is, what if we give people a better way to get discovered, a better way to connect with their fan base, a better way to build a fan base that will come out to your shows, follow your tours, follow your social media profiles, and then perhaps, again, going back to this bell curve sort of law, perhaps help you monetize the very, very tippy top end of your super fan base at a much higher rate than you could ever make on a price per stream model. And this goes back to the 100 true fans or 1,000 true fans. You're probably better off building a large or medium-sized following and then hoping that 0.01% of those convert for some sort of, you know, monthly subscription directly to you, almost like a fan-based Patreon-style system. The unit economics there are infinitely better than you trying to get from $12 a month in streaming revenue to $120 a month in streaming revenue. That's still not enough for you to quit your day job. But I think you can take that exact same fan base. Like $120 a month in streams probably means you're doing, probably hundreds of thousands of streams, right? So $120 or $12, I guess, that's 100,000 plus streams. So that's 10 to 100,000 fans. If you could, you can just kind of run the math here pretty quickly. And it's like, if you could figure out a way to convert 1% of those to a paid subscription directly to you, the unit economics are infinitely better than $12 a month.
Totally. I think that's a great point. And you hear a lot about this when you see interviews with artists. And a lot of them are skeptical of things like NFTs and don't necessarily want to, go headfirst into them. But if they want to make a living, they have to try out some new strategies to monetize their fan base. I guess one follow-up question from Forrest's point would be whether, you know, being able to monetize your fan base in different ways can help the middle class of artists by growing the size of the pie, but you might see, you know, the existing inequality continue, or whether it's more of a democratizing force there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll comment on that. So, you know, I think I'm going to assume there's a lot of skeptics in the room, right? So I get that we talk to musicians every day. NFTs are kind of has a bad rap, is kind of scary, right? So really for three reasons. And we went out to try to tackle all three of those things for the last 2 years. Number one is the energy consumption, right? So, proof of work blockchains like Bitcoin, Ethereum, has a really bad rap of minting an NFT on Ethereum. Mainnet right now takes the energy that powers your house for 5.5 days just to make one NFT. So we basically kind of decided to build our music NFT platform on Tezos, which actually takes less energy to mint an NFT than sending out a tweet. So we joke, you can't complain about our energy consumption on Twitter because you'll be using more energy than us. Number two is, NFTs are really expensive, right? So NFTs on, because gas costs, gas fees, the cost of actually running a transaction to purchase an NFT is $200, sometimes $500, $800 on Ethereum networks. So we also significantly brought that down to, to actually net effectively under a penny per NFT transaction. What that means is artists can actually mint on our platforms for little to zero cost, right? That allow you to sell your NFTs, whether it's a album cover or you know, a song for a dollar if you want to. Give it away for free if you want to engage your customers. We actually, our first drop ever was with the iHeartRadio Music Festival, where we actually minted 1 million NFTs over one night. And gave it away to fans. And that would have been impossible, right? Like, that would have cost us, like, in traditional methods, $200 million. So that is, you know, the second thing we talked about. Number three is, it's like, NFTs are really complicated. You have to be a crypto nerd, like, you know, me and everybody else on this table to know how to do it. So we basically were, like, built a, I would say, Web 2.5 on-ramp, where kind of the music fans can sign up. If you don't understand how to open a crypto wallet, it's okay. You can just sign up with an email and a phone number. So, you know, I think all those are just beginnings of tools that allow the true participation of the, you know, not only the Taylor Swifts of the world, but the emerging artists, the artist that's just getting into the space, the artist that can actually, you know, doesn't really need 100 million fans to make a living now, right? So you have the ability and the tools are at your disposal, at Audius or at OneUp, to really go out and start creating this very tight super fan community, and connect with them and offer NFTs or streaming or subscription to them. So.
Yeah, and I think that's a pretty interesting point around kind of doing these commemorative NFTs for like an iHeartRadio or things like that. I think that's a point that I would kind of drill down on. I think NFTs right now in the mainstream, for understandable reasons, have a bit of a bad rap in terms of, oh, this NFT sold for $11 million. This NFT sold for, you know, $64 million. Like, these large price tags. And, you know, you hear that and you see that, and it's like, oh, okay, well, I don't have $60+ million sitting around to buy an NFT, therefore I'm priced out of that whole crypto thing. I think it doesn't have to have that sort of a high price point. As with, you know, any other commodity, let's think about physical art. Yeah, if you want to go buy a Picasso, it might cost you $60 million. But if you want to go down to the local, like, farmer's market, there's probably somebody that does watercolor painting on the weekends, and you can still potentially derive just as much joy out of that as you could a Picasso. You know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder and all that kind of stuff. So there's this interesting thing where, at least how we see it with Audius, is, you know, not everything has to be this massive bidding war. I think you could potentially do something like, you know, in the case of Audius, this is just kind of how we think about it. If you have most of your songs available for free, which is how Audius works right now, entirely kind of marketing promotional purposes, then as we add in monetization, our offering probably looks a little bit similar to almost like a Patreon, kind of this ongoing monthly subscription. And it's up to the artist what they want to give people that subscribe to them monthly, right? It could be, oh, every month you get a commemorative NFT. Or once a year, I'll do an NFT drop to my 100 favorite fans or random fans, and that gets you backstage at one of my shows. I mean, there's really cool things you can do there. If you think of an NFT as just a digital collectible, like a digital baseball card or something like that, not everybody needs a $60 million baseball card. You know, there's plenty of people all across the U.S. and the world that enjoy baseball cards, and they don't have that kind of money.
Yeah, I think your question related to democratization, like, you're still going to have the mega artists, and art is still subjective, so there will always be the mega artists that control a lot of, you know, the industry. But I think what this is now, these different, unlocking these different revenue streams via NFTs is going to allow people to do is smaller artists who may in the past have been beholden to the streaming services or the lawyers or the record labels and needing to sign away so much of their work and their, you know, their IP, they may not have to do that anymore in order to just make ends meet and make a living. Thinking of an example, Blau, the EDM producer, who, you know, relatively doesn't have a large following compared to the mega artists, the, you know, Snoop Dogs of the world, but still through an NFT drop, I think brought in $11.5 million. So, I mean, this is really making a difference for people.
Awesome. Yeah, I think those are all great points. And maybe one thing that comes to mind when thinking about bridging the gap, both on the artist side and the community side, for folks to be able to access NFTs and other Web3 technologies as a way to show their fandom and make money and things like that. You know, what gets lost is what an NFT is at its core, which is, you know, just lines of code on a blockchain. And those lines of code will define, like, what, you know, you're referring to, but it doesn't usually actually have, like, the, you know, the original score or the original track itself in the NFT. And, you know, the blockchain shows ownership and things like that, but there's a whole piece of it, you know, that resides, like, outside of the blockchain. So, you know, just that as an example, shows that there's other layers, like social layers and legal layers and other technologies that need to sit on top of things, cultural layers, to give those things value. So I'm just wondering, and you alluded to some of these things, but what out there is missing for really NFTs to kind of explode for musical artists? Like, as folks who interact with musical artists and mint NFTs for them, what things do you see are missing that can really that are really holding things back right now, but in the future will help accelerate?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump on that one. We have very strong opinions about this with Audius, and I hate to sound like an infomercial for Audius. But I think the problem with NFTs right now is exactly the same problem that plagues most of Web3 and most of crypto, right? Which is it's so damn hard to get started. And I think a lot of people get lost in kind of, you know, missing the forest for the trees. So what I mean by that is, like, my parents still use AOL email. They still send emails using AOL. And you ask them why, and they're like, because it works. Like, they don't give a damn if it's Postgres or MySQL behind the scenes, right? Like, they use it because it is a means to an end, and it sends email. Great. Granted, there's a whole bunch of banner ads and crap, but, like, it still does the job. I think when it comes to crypto, there's a whole lot of people that start getting into these religious wars about, you know, blockchain A versus blockchain B, and, like, there's definitely merits to each, right? But at the end of the day, I think you have to kind of realize that this is a means to an end, this is a tool, and the whole point of this tech is to enable new monetization or new features or new access. We don't do nearly this good of a job. Like, not, I hate to draw this comparison, but, you know, at least how we try to think about this is a little bit more of the Apple approach, right? If Apple releases a new product, they don't talk about the tech specs. They talk about the cool new features, the glossy screen, like the fun, you know, sexy images. Like, there's a way to explain what your product does without talking about the gigahertz of the processor. And so I think that is something that crypto broadly needs to do a better job at, which is making it clear what the features are, and then, you know, I think it's on the product developers and the product engineers to put in the work behind the scenes to kind of plaster over all the rough edges. I think it's candidly kind of the most arrogant thing in the world, some of these projects that are like, oh, go read my, you know, 600-word Medium blog post, and then you can come back and use the product. It's like, come on. Like, most people don't want to spend a day doing research on your project before they use it. You as a developer need to prove its value, and then if people care, they can learn more.
Yeah, you know, obviously Forrest is a great product mind here. I mean, we absolutely agree, right? Well, you know, kind of everybody, I think a lot of company aspire to be kind of the Apple holistic product experience, right? That's kind of the epitome of what we all try to achieve. You know, we try to build our first version of oneof.com in something that you can sign up with an email address and buy your first NFT with a credit card in under 2.5 minutes, right? That's what we clocked my mom trying to do that, right? And she didn't make it under the 2.5 minute mark, but that's you know, I call her an outlier. You know, I think it's kind of up to the platforms to really kind of, I think, do a better job abstracting the difficulties and complexity, because users don't know, right? Like, there are two, right now, we're so early. I mean, congratulations to everyone for even being in this room. You are in the first inning of this revolution, right? Like, NFTs will fundamentally change the music industry, for sure. And you are here early. First inning is basically nerds building software for nerds. And there are a couple of nerds got sick of that, like, you know, me and Forrest, and we're building product that's, like, a little bit easier. We're not quite there yet, right? The idea is democratization, bringing in the next 100 million fans, true fans, to the NFT space. And it's a little bit different. Like, the fans buying NFTs and collectors or early, like, crypto whales buying NFTs are two different audience, right? Like, we're talking about Blau, who did amazing, like, groundbreaking sales of 11 million NFTs, but those are collectors, right? Those are crypto whales that's looking to accrue value and flip NFTs. If you actually, I mean, great DJ and all, but if you go to his actual events, parties, it's not like, you know, I bet some of you have like far more engaged audience at your shows than he does. So really is like the question, the problem we're trying to solve is how do we really bring access to the general consumer, to your fans, right? So not just catering to the crypto whales. And part of it is by connecting a lot of the software layers. You know, Protocol Labs and Filecoin does amazing like file storage, right? Decentralized file storage that makes sure, you know, if you do upload a music file or an image file or a video, when you mint that as an NFT, that is there forever, right? Because multiple people are decentralized system that couldn't be taken down by, you know, whoever wanted to do a takedown. So they're actually offering this service for free, you know, so it's NFT.storage and plugging your business. So this is like, this is what we use. You know, all our artists from Doja Cat to Whitney Houston to Biggie Smalls, when we put like exclusive music out as an NFT, it's stored in decentralized storage powered by Protocol Labs and Filecoin. So, but like the fans don't know. The fans don't care. The fans don't know. They can like, you know, when they come to oneof.com, they can play their NFT. Everybody's super happy, you know. So that's what we're talking about too. Like, you don't have to be a crypto. The next inning two, inning three is about like, hey, can we get it to a point where you forget that there is even blockchain at all. This is just like the new way for you to interact with your favorite artists.
Yeah, I mean, I think just in summary, like the NFT space is not yet ready to shoulder the entire burden of the music industry, but it comes down to ease of use, ease of access, and we'll get there.
Awesome, thanks. Kind of a change of gears here, but you know, music is a really unstructured canvas for folks to express themselves. And there's always historically been a tension in art where you have to balance between creating art purely as a form of expression and making a living. So, you know, portrait artists from like the Renaissance, like they were commissioned by like rich people and things like that. And that changed how we remember art from that era. So I'm just wondering if you see NFTs influencing the underlying art itself in any way. So I read an article the other day encouraging artists to create content with lower replay value, because that could help you make more money potentially by being able to generate more NFTs just from like a volume perspective. So wondering if there's anything you've seen in the works already or in the future you think we're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think music and technology are inseparable in many ways. For example, only because we invented the portable microphone that we heard the music of the Appalachian folk music. So it's these advancements that do cause music to evolve and vice versa. So in terms of, you know, NFT technology doesn't necessarily change the ability to produce music, although maybe in the audience world it's allowing for, you know, different modes of collaboration. But yeah, I think to your point about, you know, new ways of putting music out, I saw that Mike Shinoda from Linkin Park, for example, he collaborated with a couple of artists on a new track, Happy Endings, and they released just a snippet of it, a 90-second snippet, 10 NFTs for people to get, like, you know, early listen to it, and did extraordinarily well, you know, several thousand dollars, you know, revenue. Think about how that might encourage somebody who is just starting out, you know, small artist, to get the financial backing necessary to actually put out a real album. So maybe they put out just a small clip, something that they're working on as an NFT, and those 100 fans, those 1,000 fans want some financial exposure. They want to speculate. They want to support this new artist. So I think we could see, you know, how music is evolving in the minds of the creators. You know, I watch Charlie Puth on TikTok, who's like showing everybody his creative process as he's like thinking of sounds to put into these songs. So I think it might actually help us see the behind the scenes creative process, bring that closer to fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think it actually, unlike art or fine art or crypto art, like music NFTs actually allow you to actually like get away from trying to create that elusive hit, right? You can create for creative sake, and your audience, somebody, it resonates with you, right? Like some of the songs that's most emotionally important to me are when I was growing through high school and going through kind of life experiences, and they're not like radio hits, right? They are like, you know, track 4 from, you know, some album that like kind of had a special meaning to me at that moment. So I think that is what NFTs can enable, right? Like you don't need to, the whole idea is you no longer need to try to, you know, record that song that is or gimmicky, like some kind of, you know, dance on TikTok that gets you to 100 million views. You can actually create art and somebody will appreciate it and put a value greater than like, you know, a penny a stream on that. And that establishes a connection, right? And then you create another piece of work that could establish another connection that basically allow you to build a tight-knit community that you can monetize of with just a few thousand true fans.
Completely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, honestly, on this one, I'm not sure I have super strong conviction on any answer there, to be honest. I think a lot of art, the form ends, or I guess, what is it? The form ends up being kind of, to a certain sense, kind of influenced by the function, right? And so all I mean by that is there's a pretty well-substantiated theory that songs over the past few years, especially the ones that are on the top of like the Billboard charts, are shorter because they get trending on TikTok, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's an interesting thing where like, hey, if you want your song on the top of Billboard, it's got to be short and snappy because it needs to have the hook for TikTok. I mean, maybe that's kind of happens. Hey, if you want your song to do well on these NFT exchanges, like you've got to format them like this or like that. But honestly, I think we're still pretty early there. I think the people that were buying these music NFTs about a year ago, let's say, tended to be more on the collector side than the fan side. I think we're just now starting to see fans kind of slowly ease their way into this. And yeah, I think we'll see what works.
Totally. And on a related question, because, you know, like undoubtedly art is influenced by like how you are able to make a living off of it. So far, what's the most interesting use case you've seen for NFTs in the music industry?
I think there's probably 4 categories of use cases. There's fan engagement, and you see people like Snoop Dogg, bringing people into his metaverse, and interacting with people that way. And people pay $500,000 to buy a lot next to him in the metaverse. You know, it's like crazy stuff like that. But even just things that are more simple, like baseball cards, photo collectibles of band members or whatnot. So there's the fan engagement aspect. The royalties aspect, I think, is becoming more and more important. Being able to, for both artists and fans, to be able to capitalize on initial sales, but also secondary sales and down the line. New revenue opportunities, distribution opportunities, like, the various album drops that we've seen. Blau, Kings of Leon, did their whole album, their last album, as an NFT. I think there are so many different use cases that are possible now. It's exciting to see.
Yeah, we offer probably like 18 different types of NFTs you can mint, right? So there, categories, it can be kind of collectibles. Those could be music or could be photos, could be, sometimes type of digital asset people can just collect. I would say there's also kind of experiences, right? NFT that represents tickets, entries, access to different things. There's a third category of NFT that represents kind of community or membership, right? So those are usually kind of PFP projects, like profile picture projects, similar to Bored Ape. You have your own, like, 10,000 parrots or like, you know, 5,000 Doja cats or whatever that represents you're the true fan, and you get like membership access, right? You know, maybe tickets and backstage or Zoom calls. And then the last one is super interesting is actual fan ownership, right? Like the ownership of royalty streams to actual music. That's, you know, potentially just the new future of the music business model. Right now, like, you know, we're sympathetic to both sides, right? Like artists is, you know, I totally get artists' point, like, you know, like the labels are taking like 85% of like my income. Because up to now there hasn't been a real choice, right? So up to the when you establish your career up to a certain point, the only business model to advance it beyond a certain point is you had to collateralize your future earnings, whether it's collateralizing your recording earnings, right? So that's a record deal with a label, whether it's to collateralize your tour earnings, that's a tour deal with a Live Nation, or, you know, if you write songs or produce music, it's collateralizing your song royalty, your writing royalty, publishing royalty with a publisher. You have to do that because, you know, there are only very few entities that are set up to basically serve as a finance entity, right? So it's a venture model. It's kind of like a VC model. The label is basically like, well, I'm going to give you $5 million so you can actually quit, you know, like working at whatever restaurants and focus on your music for the next like 2 years and give me like 6 albums, right? Like, why did the label have to ask for 6 albums and 85% of the thing? It's because like they're writing checks to 10 other artists and like maybe one of them is going to rise up to the Spotify level that can actually break through, right? The model is terrible for artists and terrible for labels too, because they're losing $45 million on like the other, you know, artists they do. So that's why they have to take that. So we actually went to a label to be like, hey, like, why don't we, if you guys can get to a point where we can actually allow the financing of the project on the shoulder of the fans that is really like committed to this artist, would you take a much smaller cut, right? So today we are successful at all our NFT deal to carve out a much, much better rev split between the artists, the publishers, the labels, right? There's still a long way to go, but that is the future if there is true ability for fans to own a percentage, right? 0.01% of, like, I love to own 0.01% of, like, Hotel California, just to say, I'm a fan of that song. But that's, you know, I think if we fast forward 5-10 years from now, I think that will be more common than not.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, one of my favorite examples of kind of NFTs also pairs with it another acronym, which is DAOs. So DAOs are just kind of like giant anonymous online organizations. And in this case, it was actually kind of a DAO was basically formed to buy Martin Shkreli's album, right? Wu-Tang Clan from the feds, basically. And it was kind of interesting, right? Because they essentially used this thing called a DAO. They basically essentially used it as a giant GoFundMe. They got a bunch of people to toss in money, and they were able to buy something that previously had been extremely exclusive. Only one person could listen to it. And now they're in the process of kind of turning maybe each one of those tracks into their own NFT or something like that. I think everybody will be able to listen to the whole album for the first time, but maybe, you know, the 12 or the 15 tracks could be individually auctioned off so that those people recoup their money. So it's kind of an interesting one-to-many relationship there instead of kind of the many-to-one that people usually think of.
Quick show of hands. I have a few more questions in front of me, but definitely wanted to leave time for questions from the audience if you had any. If you do have a question for the panel, can you raise your hand just to know how to budget time? All right, thank you. Sweet. And, you know, we keep talking about the creator economy and being able to, you know, have a deeper connection with fans and monetize that connection, that sort of thing. But the gears were turning towards this direction even before NFTs, right? Like Patreon and, I mean, even YouTube and Twitch and platforms like that. And decentralized platforms started taking more and more of a cut. And then now you see similar inequality there as you did before. I guess Spotify is very similar to that. So I just wanted to tee that up and ask what NFTs as a technology itself, things stored on the blockchain, what that allows for and how it actually does that mechanically.
I can give a non-answer to that. It's kind of an interesting point and something that just is kind of a philosophical, like personal feeling of mine, which is like, yeah, exactly, right? In the beginning, a lot of these Web2 services had very low take rates. Over time, they start realizing that it costs money to run servers, the VC money kind of tapers off, they need to have an actual business model, take rate climbs to 10%, 20%, 30%. I think we can all agree that when that gets to a predatory level, like 80 or 85%, that's clearly not good. What is kind of interesting, though, is going back to this point about discoverability and building a fan base. Like, let's say whatever your favorite service is goes from a 10% take rate, so you get to keep 90%. Let's say it goes to a 15% take rate, so you only get to keep 85%. Like, yeah, that sucks, but in order to counteract that, all you need to do is grow your fan base by 5%. So, which isn't to say that that's easy or trivial. It's just is an interesting thing where, like, instead of thinking about it in terms of how do I optimize for the lowest take rate, I think sometimes you perhaps do the slightly higher take rate but larger audience, or you lean into the service that lets you build a bigger fan base. Because if platform A can help me get 2x the true fans, like, that's infinitely better than a 5% difference in take rate.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what an NFT actually is doing is it's providing a verifiable digital signature that is trackable on this thing called the blockchain, which provides an immutable ledger of transactions or valuable digital assets. That's, in a nutshell, what it's actually doing. And in a virtual world, this introduces ownership and it introduces scarcity, which prior to this technology was you couldn't really do that in a verifiable and trustworthy way. So I think in the music industry, there's already sort of the ethos of wanting to own and wanting to participate with the artists that you care about. I think the Wu-Tang Clan album is a great example. That was like almost like version one of what an NFT was, you know, using the DAO model exactly to purchase this exclusive album that nobody had heard, and now that you know they're thinking about actually implementing the technology. But in effect, it was almost like an NFT. And you know, I think about you know, like Taylor Swift, who is reclaiming all of her albums that she didn't own, re-releasing, re-recording them. The Red album that came out late last year, the 10-minute version of All Too Well that broke everybody's brain. I mean, can you imagine if she had released some limited number of All Too Well NFTs for people to listen to like an hour before everybody else could? I mean, that would have been a huge opportunity for fan engagement. People would have purchased it. They want to be a part of it. I think it surpassed Bohemian Rhapsody as the number one longest track to chart number one on Billboard. So, this is already happening, and now NFTs are allowing provable ownership, provable scarcity.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of parts to that question. So, you know, I think number one, NFTs is just a certificate of authenticity of digital ownership, right? Like, we had 25 years of internet where we owned nothing. None of us own anything, right? Like, the platforms actually own everything from content to our identity. So NFT changes that, right? So if my platform goes down and you bought an NFT from your favorite artist and you move that to your wallet, doesn't matter if you know, one of went down, Spotify went down, you forever have ownership to that digital asset and have that connection directly to the artist. So that's very fundamentally different in how we think about access and assets and platforms role. And I think where the platform role is really a variable take rate, right? So if an artist can come to, like, today, I would tell you 90% of the artists that we work with, we do everything from like designing NFTs to minting NFTs to marketing to sales. We don't want to be a label, but I feel like sometimes I'm doing more than what their labels are doing. And, you know, it's a very small percentage we take. But I think it could even be smaller if the artist come to us with publishing cleared, with everything, rights to everything, they can be like, we have an idea or we have the design for an NFT already, and this is exactly how I'm gonna like roll this out to the community. Then like, great, and then it's just a technology tool. We want to get there, right? We want to just be the technology partner for every major and independent artist out there. And you know, I think in a few years, with kind of as artists and tools getting easier and easier, everybody can do this.
Awesome. Well, we have about 10, 15 minutes left. We have a microphone in this aisle. So if you do have a question, please line up and we can answer them. And depending on the number of questions, maybe we'll have the full panel answer. Or if someone has a strong opinion, do a little bit more of a speed round. Please go ahead.
I'm glad to hear somebody really talking a little bit deeper about technology, and I may challenge you with this. So to me, it seems like democratization, the easiest path to that is you have a digital ticket, so a proof of attending performance NFT is a logical step. If you get one of the first, it will appreciate in value. Then you get to what I really would like to hear is, are you leaning into protocols like EIP 2981 that is going to manage the royalty stream for that asset for the lifetime of the asset? So I'm making investments in this technology to do these sort of things, to manage the asset lifetime. What are your, I mean, Tezos, I know a lot about you guys. I don't know, Lynn, how you guys have deployed it to see whether or not you could partner with a company that has apps for fans and for pros that would be able to add this to, you bought your ticket, you showed up, it was verified, now you have a standard commoditized NFT that's POAP, but then you could also have a VIP POAP that has even something special, meet and greets, photos, other kinds of things that step up the value of that NFT. So talk tech and how you partner with someone who can bring a fan base, who can bring, you know, a Shooter Jennings, or who can bring a Yellow Wolf to the party. How can you help us accelerate the adoption of this stuff?
Yeah, we're building two things. So number one, we have a trusted partner API we're going to expose to, you know, other technology companies, other partners, to basically mint you know, NFTs using all the tools that we built and onboarding. Number two is we have a self-minting capability that we are probably 60, 90 days out to allow anybody in the audience to be able that can, like, you know, that has a, that knows how to upload your song to Spotify, you should be able to like mint that as an NFT or whatever through our tools. The, you know, I think the dirty little secret is that the secondary royalties right now, that's basically meaning if somebody bought your NFT, they resell that, the original artist should get a percentage of that fee. That is not guaranteed beyond the borders of the platform. What we are doing in the short term is we have bilateral agreements with the other marketplaces. So if you mint on one of and ended up, like, you know, wanting to sell it on OpenSea actually respects our a royalty contract, will pay us back, will pay our artists that royalty. In the longer run, there are many different proposals. You know, I know on Ethereum, there's actually a new proposal, 40A-something, that's really great at protecting royalty. I think that'll get adopted and also replicated on across multiple blockchains, right? So I think pretty soon, there will be like pretty standard ways to manage royalties. You know, that's kind of a tech nerd situation that we're trying to abstract. So,
awesome. Thanks. Go ahead. Next question.
Perfect. Thank you. My name is, well, this is loud. My name is Pedro Ruiz. I'm a deep learning engineer that kind of stumbled into the music area. And throughout the panels, from the interactive part and now on the music, a lot of the things that I've been looking at, and right now I didn't know about audios. So a lot of what I'm trying to pivot towards and kind of like lean more is AI is very abundant and being able to generate a lot of music, a lot of stuff. So I wanted to hear your opinion on kind of like seeing this AI experimentation for riffing off, remixing, and being able to offer it as, I don't know if it's tokenized or not, but allowing artists to sort of have a copy, kind of like copyright management, kind of like if you buy it or you subscribe, then you get access to the stems and being a part of the membership. Or how would you guys think that AI would fit into this in the generative side of things? Because obviously it's very different, a kid in his bedroom with a guitar kind of like running stuff versus the AI that can, I can just even automate a flow where it gets like every day there's 100 new stems on Audius. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to take that one. Yeah, it's a great question, right? There's a handful of projects right now that are doing exactly that, right? Kind of thinking about this in terms of like, hey, copyright situation is tough or tricky. How about I generate content from scratch or like from my own like, you know, riffs or stems, and like how about I generate these like longer form MP3s and then distribute those? It's really interesting. I mean, I like, for instance, we have an open API that anybody can plug into and use. Like, it's basically a RESTful API that is actually exactly identical to how SoundCloud's API was consumed. Just for people that used to use SoundCloud's API, they got rate limited or whatever else, they can then just take that exact same code and point it to audius.co instead of SoundCloud. And so we've got a whole bunch of like games on Steam and things like that that are pulling from the Audius API. And it's up to the person that uploads the songs how they want their content to be used, of course. And so by default, similar to any other social media platform like Instagram or Twitter or whatever, the content you upload to Audius can also be distributed to third parties using the API. So we've got like, for instance, one of the top, like, it's a beat, one of the top games on Steam. It's like a beat matching, like, almost Guitar Hero, but as a racing game called Music Racer. And, like, as you race through this 3D world, obstacles appear according to the beats. And, like, before us, he was using open source, free, royalty-free songs, which were okay. But then, you know, all of a sudden he plugged in the Audius API, and now he can race through, like, a Deadmau5 or a Skrillex song. And so it made his game way more compelling, and it helped out our artists because it gives them exposure. So I think there's absolutely a world where, you know, we at this point have about 1 million tracks on Audius. We need 10 million, or we need 100 million, right? And I think as long as the quality and the caliber is there, I think AI generative stuff is really cool.
Awesome. Next question.
Hey, this might be a super basic question. I'm just not understanding, like, if you have a piece of cover art that's an NFT, how is that truly scarce? Like, if someone can just take a screenshot of it and have, like, a high quality image of the same, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean that's been the argument that's come up all around, you know, in digital art, graphic art, around NFTs. Mm-hmm. It's like if I can get a screenshot of it, is it really scarce and valuable? The difference is you have a certificate of authenticity, provable ownership, and that's the piece that in theory matters. So the fact that other people may be able to view it or see it or have a, you know, screenshot of it is not what we're really talking about here. I think of it similarly as, you know, I can still have a print of a Picasso in my house, but I know that it's not a real one. And the people who value a real one, you know, they know that it's not a real one either. So it's replication versus ownership. And in certain spheres and in certain markets, it's the real ownership that matters. And I think that's true in physical art as well.
Mm-hmm. Completely. There's the digital ownership aspect. And if I could just kind of add one thing, I've also seen some that have like a physical thing associated with it,
that's
right?
True. Yeah.
Like, oh, this is an NFT and it looks nice, but like it'll also get you backstage at my show.
Or a signed copy of your album or something.
Yeah. Exactly. So not that that's probably all the value, but there are interesting like real world tie-ins too sometimes.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
The Picasso print is a good analogy, right? There's the original Picasso, but there's maybe 100 prints. The 100 print can be a 100 edition NFT, right? And then there are the Picasso where I just right-clicked and save on my desktop, which is great, mm-hmm. but I can't really resell that. Mm-hmm. Think about that, right? Like, I can't take it to a auction house and be like, I want to sell this, like, digital thing I just copied on my NFT. I mean, mm-hmm. I copied on my screen. But the print I can actually sell, right? There is a value, right? There is a, maybe it's worth $1,000, right? It's not the original. The original is going to be worth, like, $2 million. So that's kind of what NFT can do. It can actually authenticate the original and the print, the limited edition version, right?
Yeah.
And
then, And I think it's a similar thing. Like, anybody can hear a song on the radio, but to say that you have some original vinyl record from 1962 or whatever, that has some sort of, brings you some sort of clout, some sort of, you're part of a community that's really invested in this artist. I think it's a similar, we're just taking that idea into the virtual world.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, so just, are we good to go over a little bit? Okay, so maybe we go speed round here, if you don't mind capping the question, and we'll just have one panelist answer.
Okay, perfect. I'm Francisco, I'm from Mexico, and I work for a record label, so this question is derived from the previous question. If you're a record label, you want your intellectual property protected. So for me, as a rights owner, it doesn't really matter that someone bought it first, if it's available free online for everybody to consume. So how would you, are there any developments to protect intellectual property and control that and make sure that it's not a new source for piracy for protected material?
Is that a one-off question?
Yeah, so we curate the content, and then even in the Open Minting edition, we basically have a verification tapping to multiple APIs to make sure, ensure you are the copyright owner before we publish that. It is a huge problem. Like I would say, you know, there's stats that 80% plus of the content on OpenSea are you know, violations of IP copyrights. So we're trying to do the opposite, right? And that's what the space really do need, is actually better protection of copyright. So we're 100% there.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, my name is Steve Ressner. I'm a musician, audio engineer, and general NFT skeptic. So my main question is, say you sell an NFT, it's on the musician to keep creating content, right? And you can keep selling NFTs for new NFTs, new songs, all that kind of stuff. Is there any sort of platform where the musician then gets constant royalties, much like radio play? After that NFT is sold, am I getting a share every time it's streamed, every time it's played? Is there some sort of regenerative income from that? Or do I have to always create content?
So right now, basically, every time the NFT is exchanged hands, sold to the next person, so there's a royalty that you can define in a smart contract that goes back to you. When the music on decentralized web is streamed, right now there is no party that collects revenue against that to pay anyone.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Hi, thank you guys for being here. My name is Ariel. I work for a label and publishing company, and my question is relating to royalty splits to songwriters. I know that some platforms have splitters, some don't. It seems like kind of an accounting nightmare for an independent artist who has co-writers. So I'm wondering where you think that's heading and how we can ensure that writers are fairly compensated.
I guess that's coded in the smart contract initially when you set it up.
Yeah, right now, the way we basically have allocation, so usually, you know, depends on if it's a new sync or it's normal, it's anywhere between 15 to 50% for the songwriters. So we care about the songwriters a lot. So it's kind of, yeah, the difficulty is like actually, you know, administer that like royalty transaction. So the artist had to basically, you know, we had to basically do the deals with multiple publishing companies. It's difficult, but we are, you know, we have, you know, agreements with the top five publishing companies, or certainly there are hundreds more that we are trying to get through in the next year or two. So,
cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess technology still doesn't solve all the business, you know, negotiations that still have to happen.
Yeah, even in kind of music royalty NFTs, even if we define that, like, let's say 10% goes to, you know, a group of users, we still had to collect that royalty from Apple and from Spotify. It's not 100% on chain.
It's not magic.
Hi, my name is Charlie. I'm a super newbie to NFTs, so forgive me if this question is ignorant, but how is there any integration right now or any thought to like licensing? Let's say an NFT somebody wants to put the music track in a movie, in a commercial? Is there any way to do that? Quantify how many times it was viewed, things like that, in the tech stack?
Yeah, very early, but we're super excited. So the Biggie partnership, there will be a Biggie DAO that actually control the vote, can vote on the rights to how to license a very, very famous Biggie song. So you know, I think we hope to set a model that other artists can then, you know, start brainstorming and thinking how they can use the technology. So yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Hi. So I think one of the things that's most interesting to me about NFTs are the communities that get built around them online. And I was wondering where you think the music NFT communities will be. Is it on Discord? Is it on Twitter Spaces? Is it on Instagram? What do you think that is?
It seems to be on Discord, from what I can tell. I'm curious to get you all's take. But it is, I mean, this has happened in the last like 2 years, right? I think just broadly, Discord has exploded, and it tends to be the two-way communication platform for most of these services. I think like Twitter is still obviously a many-to-many sort of relationship, right? Like if you want to like see who's yelling about something in the crypto like NFT space, like that still works as a broadcast medium. But if you want to talk with the developers or you want to talk with the individuals, like Discord seems to be the place right now.
I think Doja Cat's her Planet Doja was on Discord, right? Yeah. So it's yeah.
So to the artists in the space, just a shameless plug, if you guys want to get involved, we have a program called Cosign. So you want to check out oneof.com/cosign, and we want to hear from you. So we want to build product and tools that fit your needs. So,
awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming by the panel. It's great to talk about NFTs and music here at South by Southwest, where that's really the intersection. And yeah, see you around.